If you were asked to prepare a list of people, biblical characters, of whom it could be said this individual is a person after God's own heart, who would make your list? I wonder if David would make many of our lists. I'm confident he would probably not make all of our lists. For even though we recognize that David is a great name in the history of Israel, when we turn to the Bible and start reading of his life, we find things there that are at best repulsive, and indeed are worthy of condemnation, perhaps even of death. As a result of those things, we might determine that David certainly could not be, and probably never was, a man after God's own heart. And yet, the passage that was read for us a moment ago from 1 Samuel chapter 13 described him in exactly that manner. In fact, it may surprise you that the relationship between David and Jehovah was so close that there was actually a period of time in Israel's history when Jehovah was called the God of David. Now, some of you know what that's like. As young people whom you have raised have become better known or more capable, it used to be, for instance, this is Jess Hall, and now it becomes this is Eric Hall's father or something like that. And what the Scripture is saying is that the relationship between David and God was so close that there was a period of time when people spoke of God not as Jehovah, but this is the God of David. What was the secret? What enabled David to have this kind of relationship with God? What made him feel so close to God, and what made God feel so close to David? Obviously, from what we have already said, we can look away from the fact that he was a perfect person. In fact, we can just stop right now if our answer is, well, David wasn't perfect, but David was better than everybody else, because that apparently was not even true, depending on how you define better. And yet David and God were very close. The secret may be revealed in reading the Psalms. The Psalms are literally a window into the soul of David. It's almost as if we have a daily personal diary of David. And we have the opportunity to open it up and to read it. Now, most of us might be upset if our daily personal diaries were read. Some of you had, some of you have, brothers and sisters, who one day found your daily personal diary, and they opened it up, and they read pages out of it, and it led to, well, I won't say what it led to. You know what it led to. It was not a pleasant situation, because those are things that we want to retain as personal. We don't want people to read them. But that's what we have in the Psalms of the life of David. And some 73 of the Psalms are attributed to David. And interestingly enough, at the beginning of some of the Psalms, we are told the circumstances that were occurring in the life of David, which are being described in the psalm. And I suggest to you that sometimes it's hard to recognize that these are really parallel accounts, because there's a great deal of difference between what we read in 1 and 2 Samuel is going on in David's life and the way David describes it in the book of Psalms. But I think perhaps in making these comparisons between what we might call David's inner life as revealed in the Psalms and his outer life as revealed in 1 and 2 Samuel, we get an insight into what created the relationship between him and his God. Let's look at some instances where that comparison can be made. For instance, in Psalm 56, David very gratefully credits God for delivering his soul from death. And in fact, it is in this psalm that we read that marvelous phrase, "In God I trust." Listen to the opening verses of the psalm. "Be merciful to me, O God, for men hotly pursue me. All day long they press their attack. My slanderers pursue me all day long. Many are attacking me in their pride. When I am afraid, I will trust in you, in God whose word I praise. In God I trust. I will not be afraid. What can mortal man do to me?" Now, if you read that psalm, and you may read it in its entirety, we've just read the first four verses, it sounds as if God had somehow miraculously intervened in the life of David and had delivered him from some very bad predicament. But what actually happened? When you turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 21 and see what was really going on, it doesn't appear as if God was involved at all. David was afraid, and he needed to be delivered. And he thought there was just one way for him to get his deliverance, and that was for him to act like a madman. And this is the occasion of which we, with which we are familiar, when David behaved as he had probably seen Saul behave on occasions, because Saul was described as having a spirit. So he had had some exposure to how madmen might act. And David literally acted crazy to the point that spittle was allowed to run down his beard. And he did that in a desperate attempt to save his own neck. We read 1 Samuel 21 and we say, where's the miracle? Where is the intervention of God that is described over in Psalm 56? We don't see it in the language that is used in 1 Samuel chapter 21. Indeed, what we see is more or less a canny renegade with some rather strong survival instincts. And he's doing what it takes in order to survive the problem with which he is confronted. Turn over to Psalm 59. In Psalm 59 and verse 17, David recites these words, "O my strength, I sing praise to you. You, O God, are my fortress, my loving God." Once again, from the psalm, it seems as if God had intervened in the life of David to deliver him. But when we turn back to 1 Samuel 19, which is the corresponding passage in the life of David, we read of a chase scene. We read again of an occasion where David's life was being threatened, and where Jonathan, the son of Saul, worked with David to help him be delivered, as did Michal, David's wife, who was the daughter of Saul. And what actually happened was that they took an idol and wrapped it in a blanket and put goat's hair as the head, at the head of it, so that if anybody came in and looked, they would think that it was David still sleeping in the bed. And in the meantime, David had slipped out and made his getaway. Once again, you read the psalm, God gets all of the credit. But if you turn back and read 1 Samuel chapter 21, it again looks for all of the world like how David got away was by human ingenuity, a little disguise, a little deceit. Psalm 57. Psalm 57 introduces a new tone on David's part, a tone of weakness and of trembling. It seems to show a fugitive crying out for mercy. It appears that David's faith was beginning to waver when he wrote the 57th Psalm. And yet if you turn back to 1 Samuel 24, which is the corresponding passage, and we'll talk more about this particular one in just a few moments, we find what appears to be one of the most defiant displays of courage in all of the history of mankind, not to mention the history of Israel. We'll not take time to read it, but if you turn back to the 18th Psalm, the 18th Psalm gives a discussion of the entire military history, the military experience of David. It was written when David had finally put away all of the pretenders, when Saul was finally out of the way, when David had finally become the undisputed king at last of Israel. And in that psalm, the 18th psalm, it recounts many of the miracles that God performed in delivering David from his enemies and in preserving David to the point that this man after God's own heart became the king over Israel. Now, if you read just that psalm and you do not read the related passages and history in 1 and 2 Samuel, you might conclude that David led a particularly charmed life, that he was particularly sheltered and taken care of, because you see, the psalm, the 18th psalm, doesn't tell anything of the chases and the battles and the wily escape plots that fill the pages of 1 and 2 Samuel in the life of David. In short, what we're suggesting is this, that if you read the Psalms and try to envision the life of David, you will fail miserably. You just will not get an accurate picture of the life of David from what he writes in the Psalm. You might conclude that here is some kind of pious, otherworldly hermit. You might decide that here is a timid, neurotic soul who is favored by God, but you might not come away with the feeling that here is a giant of strength, here is a giant of valor. Now the question is, what can explain the disparity between David's inner life described in the Psalms and David's outer life described in 1 and 2 Samuel? Perhaps the answer is found in David's view of the world. Most of us, I think it's probably safe to say, view the world as sort of like a movie. We see the characters, we see the sets, we see the different twists of plot that take place. And yes, you guessed it, we see ourselves as playing the starring role. I am the Robert Redford of my life. And you are of yours. But when we begin to look at David, he seemed to see things from a different point of view. He didn't see things like we see ourselves at the center of our universe and at the center of our world. You and I attend the same event. We may go home from that event and we may have the same outward facts in our mind. Who was there? What happened? What events transpired? But when I try and think about that occasion, the questions that I ask are, was I witty? Was I charming? Or did I say something I shouldn't have? Did I embarrass myself? Was I really a good star of my show? And you ask the same questions. Except you've got a different star. You're asking those questions about yourself. But when David looked at his life, David saw a different star. Now surely if we look at the exploits of David recorded in 1 and 2 Samuel, we must admit that David had earned the right to be a star. I mean, after all, here is a man who would go out and kill wild animals with his bare hands. Here is a man who would go out, not as a man, but really as a boy. And when Goliath stood up and threatened all of the armies of Israel and had the bravest of its soldiers quaking in their boots, David said, "Let me at him." And armed with his slingshot and his faith in God, he went out and he took care of Goliath. He survived all of the onslaughts of Saul. He put the Philistines on the run. All of these things surely earned him a role as a star. But as David reflected on those events, and as he wrote poems or psalms about them, who do we find on center stage? Not David. But the God of David. Whether he expressed it in a poem or whether he expressed it in an earthy harangue, and David made some of those, in either case, David intentionally involved God in the details of his daily life. And he did that because David had confidence that in his relationship with God and in God's relationship with him, he mattered to God. In fact, we suggested a moment ago that the 18th Psalm recited the military history of David. Do you realize that at one point in that Psalm, the 19th verse, David said, God delivered me, or He rescued me, because He, that is, God, delighted in me. Would you and I ever say a thing like that? God delighted in me. Another time, he actually argued with God. In Psalm 30 and verse 9, he said in so many words, "What good will it do you if I die, Lord? Who will praise you then?" And when David felt betrayed of God, he didn't hesitate to let God know it. After all, David was the first one to use the words in Psalm 22, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" He called God into account, demanding that God keep up his end of their relationship. And he was able to do these things because David was convinced that this unseen world of God and heaven and angels was just as real as his world of battles and swords and spears and caves. And I suggest to you that the book of Psalms forms a record of David's conscious effort to subject his own daily life to the reality of the invisible world beyond him where God lived. I think that the 57th Psalm illustrates this principle at work as well as any. David composed it. And the title says that he composed it when he fled into a cave. 1 Samuel 24 sets the scene. Saul, with his well-trained army, had completely surrounded David and his men. They were blocked off from all avenues of escape. And David, having nowhere else to go, finally was holed up in a cave next to a sheep pen. The psalm, as you might expect, expressed anxiety and fear. But strangely enough, this psalm with David in that predicament, though it expresses anxiety and fear, ended with this triumphant imperative, "Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all of the earth." Somehow, in the process of writing, David was able to lift his eyes up from the dank and smelly cave to the heavens above. And in this most unlikely of settings, he was able to affirm simply, if not in actual words, at least in his attitude, "God reigns." And perhaps it was the next morning that David, having, as it were, talked himself into faith by the writing of this very psalm, walked out of that cave armed with nothing more than an appeal to conscience. And won the day. In David's outward life, he was threatened, he was beset, he was afraid. But in his inner life, he was able to say, "God, we're still partners. God, you're still involved with me in the daily activities of my life." And the more he recognized it, the braver he got. That was what enabled him to walk out of that cave and confront Saul and his armies with such a display of moral courage that the world stands in awe. Now, there are very few of us, thankfully, who live as David did, on the verge of mortal danger. But all of us, have times when our courage fails. All of us have times when fear creeps in. All of us have times when it seems to us that God is withdrawn, and when the hostile forces have driven us into the cave by the sheep pens, and there seems nowhere to go and no way to survive. But what David's experience is telling us is that even centuries later, we can turn to these prayers that David prayed in writing, and we can use these prayers as steps to faith, a path to lead us away from the obsession with ourselves, and to recognize that God reigns, that God rules, that God will survive, and that we with Him will survive if we'll just be partners with Him and let Him be involved in our daily lives. And I suggest to you that it was David's seeking of that presence, the presence of God in his daily life that made David a man after God's own heart. David, were you perfect? No. David, did you stumble and fall? Yeah. I did. But David, did you do your best to walk hand in hand with God? Where are we tonight? Jess Hall, are you perfect? No, to ask the question is to answer it. Have you sinned? Oh, yes. But can you still be a person after God's own heart? David's experience tells us that we can. But if we're going to be, let each of us tonight, not literally but in our hearts, reach up and put our hand in the hand of God and resolve that day by day and moment by moment we're going to walk with Him and He with us, and that we will be closely knit together in our minds, in our purposes, in our goals, in our aims. And it can be said of each of us that we are a person after God's own heart. Are you having that walk with Him? Do you have that relationship with Him? When you get in the smelly caves of life, do you know that God reigns and that He's there with you? You can by faith. If you don't have that relationship, wouldn't you rededicate your life to Him tonight? If you're not His child, wouldn't you come into that relationship so you can live in that confidence? If you're a faithful Christian and you've moved into our community, we'd want you to be identified with us in our work and worship to help us serve God together, always to His glory. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come while we stand and while we sing?